Welcome to the Art of Advisory. My name is Kirk Bowman from Art of Value, and I'm joined by my co-host Hector Garcia from Quick Bookkeeping. Hey, Hector.
Hey, Kirk. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So we are back to talk about the third pillar in our series on the three pillars of a successful practice. And this one, we're going to be talking about innovation. Probably the first thing we need to do is just define innovation so that we can kind of set the groundwork for the other things that we're going to put on top of that. What is innovation?
If I wanted to simplify it, is something new, right? Something new, unexpected, a new product, a new solution, a new way of approaching things, a new way of seeing things, a new solution to an old problem, or a discovery of a problem that nobody knew existed, and then subsequently a solution for it. And there's some really good examples I can give on that. I think the smartphone problem is probably the best example. I think everybody you know, Kirk, and everybody I know, most people that I know, have smartphones. And if they leave it at home, 4 hours later, they'll be eating their nails and half their fingers, and they'll recognize that they have a problem. The problem that I don't have my smartphone with me. And before smartphones existed, that was never a problem. So the innovation of smartphones created a new problem and subsequently a new solution. So innovation has many, many forms, right? The first form of innovation that we can think of is like, you know, when man invented fire, right? I mean, fire was a paradigm shift, right? You can cook stuff. I mean, that's night and day for your options. You know, nowadays we don't get those, you know, fire type level of innovation, because most innovation feels like something slightly better than the last version, and sprinkled throughout, you know, all these innovations that feel like a slight better version of the last version, there's a few really transformative ones, which we have coined as the concept of disruptive. And I think the most recent one that was like life-changing disruptive is the internet. The internet as a whole was as disruptive as it gets. It changed the lifestyle of Earth. It changed the standard of communication. It changed how people think about access to information. Take it one step further back, we think about Henry Ford and the car. And I think this quote, which is a credit to him, which I think is genius, is, if I have asked my customers what they wanted, I would have given them faster horses. And not all innovation is innovation that happens in a lab with technology, right? Some innovation is innovation of thought, innovation of the mind, innovation of interaction, innovation of how we think of things, how we value things. And that Henry Ford quote contradicts the axiom that necessity is the mother of innovation, right? So I want you to think of innovation as a sort of a two-headed monster. We have the one in which is born from a necessity, right? Like there was an obvious necessity, an obvious void in the market, and that innovation is a solution for that. And the one such as the internet or the car or the smartphone, where they invented something that no one was asking for. And you created, that invention created a new problem. And because you invented the problem, you also invented the solution. And with that comes the biggest learning from one of my favorite books, business books ever, called Zero to One from Peter Thiel, which says, when you build a business, build it as if you were building a monopoly. And I think Henry Ford built a business that way, right? You build a car in a world with no paved roads, in a world with no gas stations every block, in a world where it's much cheaper to have a horse than have this machine, which was basically a bomb, a combustion, the early version of a combustion engine where people died in exploding cars, which cost 10 times what a horse cost, and maintenance was much higher. Nothing about the car ever spelled, you know, this innovation has to do with voiding a gap. Innovation is also the disruption of the marketplace by creating new problems. And I think that one of the best things I've done for myself and my practice was to innovate in the marketplace and create a new problem. So,
you know, it's interesting when you think about the car. Ford wasn't the person who invented the car. His company wasn't even one of the first companies making cars. He entered the market at the point where the car had been invented, and a lot of the problems you're describing were actual, right? They were horrendously expensive. They were unreliable. They blew up, et cetera, et cetera. And he said, I want to make a car for the common man. His innovation was not the car. His innovation was actually the assembly line and applying that type of manufacturing to lower the price of the car where it could become more affordable. And if you look at the impact that had, we can attribute things such as our interstate highway system back to that, right? Now, there's not a direct corollary. There's several decades that go between those two things. But still, right, if he had never figured out how to mass produce automobiles in a way that most people could afford them, it wouldn't have led to the infrastructure that we now drive on.
And you could argue Apple did the same thing. I mean, supercomputers with the power of an iPhone existed. What they did it is figure out how to get a $20,000 supercomputer fit in your pocket and make it $800. It's very similar to what it is. So they created a new problem. They took an existing problem, which is how do we get people to think that the new standard is to have a supercomputer in your pocket? That wasn't, like, nobody was asking for that. And people were asking for phones that, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know what, smartphones, I've been with my smartphones all my life, and I had a BlackBerry before that, and I had a couple of flip phones before that. But the history of what phones were before smartphones got erased from my memory because they created a new problem, which is phones are supposed to be smart. You know, just like cars were supposed to be affordable and accessible and usable by the common man. So innovation is not just creating a new product. I think it's also creating, again, repeating myself, I think it's also creating the new problem. And I think that's one of the areas that most people lack when they think of innovation. They only think of technology. Sometimes you have to think about the new problem.
Well, with new innovation comes naturally new opportunities, new problems. And so innovation is a cycle that sometimes feeds on itself, sometimes goes in a completely different direction. One of the things that you had mentioned from this book, Zero to One, that I want to hear you talk more about is not to go for global domination. What's that all about?
Yeah, so, you know, Peter Thiel, who's the founder, one of the founders of PayPal, in one way, PayPal kind of is a world domination type of business, but it never started that way. If you remember correctly, PayPal was solving the problem of increasing trust of electronic payments between eBay users. That's niche. That's what you call a niche market, right? When people think of what PayPal is today, PayPal is no longer a niche market. People say, oh, PayPal is a standard where international people transfer money across each other. PayPal did get to that, I think, that global domination stage. But when they created it, they didn't think about that. Because if they were, they would not have gotten to where they were. Because they focused on solving a very specific problem, which eBay had created, by the way. That was never a problem before. Electronic payments between electronic auctions was not, eBay created a new problem, and the spinoff from eBay was PayPal. And they created the problem, and they solved their own problem. And PayPal had monopoly over solving the problem of creating trust between two people in an electronic auction paying each other. So they set out to do that and just that, specialize and do it so well that they were able to build a platform from it. So it's just stay away when it comes to innovation. Stay away of thinking in that grand vision of solving world hunger. You know, like I think a lot of folks, when they come up with their ideas, they're looking for the idea that serves the biggest market. Because if you think of statistics, well, the bigger the market, the bigger the probability there'll be a customer out there. The problem is that serving so many customers or so many needs becomes much harder. You need a megaphone. You need a Super Bowl ad, correct? To be able to reach that much people. But where you're looking at a group of seven people that all have the same problem and they all identify themselves with the same problem, and you talk to all seven of them in one shot and say, hey guys, I got a problem for all seven of you, the chances that you're gonna close that deal or you're gonna have a much higher close rate are much higher because you're specializing on being able to just quickly speak to very small groups. Now, that's not a multi-billion dollar business, because when people think of multi-billion dollar business, they think of world domination. But I don't think any of these companies that got to where they were thinking that. And that's the reason why they got it.
So in other words, if you're thinking world domination when you're trying to innovate, it's going to be an obstacle to actually innovating. Innovating, to use your example, solving world hunger. Well, what is it going to take to make sure, for example, the kids who have free or reduced lunch at school, at my neighborhood elementary school, when school's out for 3 months in the summer, what's it going to take to make sure that they get fed the meals that they don't have that were provided by the school during those 3 months, right? Or some other local manifestation of that. Find a solution for that. Innovate in that and focus on solving one specific problem for one specific group. And then that innovation will have an opportunity to grow into something else, but you'll never have that opportunity if you don't focus small at first.
Right. The idea behind specialization and niche, and I know people get tired of hearing the same thing over and over, but the idea of it is the freedom from having the pressure of solving everybody's problems. And that's a really, I mean, think about any company, the level of stress that the janitor has. And I know people use that cliche, janitor and CEO, but the level of stress that the janitor has versus the CEO has, right? People argue the reason why one gets paid the most is because one can manage a million tasks and a million responsibilities and respond to them and make them happen. And the other one, it just has to worry about having, you know, clean facilities. But the challenge is that when you only have to worry about one thing and one thing only, it's much faster and quicker your path to mastery. And it's faster and quicker your path to discover your abilities. When you have so many things on top of you and you're solving so many different problems and your emotional capacity is spread thin across all these problems you have to solve, how are you ever going to master one and discover from within yourself your capacity to master anything? So I think the folks that have so much stuff in their plate because they're not focused, they never gain the confidence of their ability to disrupt any marketplace because they never gave themselves the opportunity to master a specific specialty skill or problem to solve, which is why I think it's so important to, at least I'll say when you're first getting started, you know, specialize to make it easier to get better at something and get easier to communicate what you're best at, what you're best in class at. And he talks a lot about best in class. He says, when you want to build something or create something, do it in such a way that when people talk about it, they immediately say best in class, or they think best in class.
So 0 to 1 starts out by saying, don't think about global domination when you're starting out. But yet in the same book, he then goes on to later say, you're not done till you create a monopoly. So how do you kind of reconcile those two things? You know, don't go for global domination, but then later on, go for a monopoly. What's that? Help me out there.
That's a good one. So when we think of, and I think the reason why you're having an issue with the dichotomy is because when you think of monopoly, you think of AT&T and you think of Microsoft and you think of Exxon and Chevron. You think about just the big conglomerates that have these big monopolies. But he's talking about the little monopolies. Like, for example, when you search on the internet, for an expert in fixing QuickBooks manufacturing problems, I have a monopoly on that. You know what I mean? That's not a world domination mindset of monopoly. That is a very narrow thinking, very focused thinking type of monopoly. And the reason why small to medium manufacturers all over the world gravitate towards my channel and they call me is because they can't find another accountant that has written and talked about and created videos about small to medium manufacturers using QuickBooks with inventory problems. And I created a tiny little monopoly there. So he's not talking about the AT&T monopolies. He's talking about the small pockets of monopoly that you create in the marketplace through specialization and niche.
Well, really what he's saying is the same thing two different ways, right? Whether he's saying don't go for global, I can't talk. Whether he's saying don't go for global domination or go for a monopoly, essentially what he's saying is specialize, be an expert, and be the expert, be the best in class expert is what he's saying.
Yeah, correct. He's not saying be an expert. He's saying be the best at it, period. Because that needs to be it. That needs to be it. And that's tough for anyone to hear and say, come on, really? You am I really going to be the best at whatever it is? We have so many people out there. Well, if you don't make the switch in your head that's your goal in life, right? That's your ethos. Then how are you going to get there? Yeah. The way to transform it is to first you have to say, I'm the best in class at it. Once you say it, you convince yourself that you're at it, and then you're good enough to convince others that you're at it. Now you got to talk the talk, right? You got to walk the walk. Sorry. Now that you talk the talk, now you got to walk the walk. Now you have that pressure to be it. And in order to be a superstar or a best in class at anything, you first have to believe that you can, because otherwise you will never get there. So a lot of innovation is it's literally a switch in your head. And the problem with my fellow accountants, especially during tax season, you know, or during the busy season, where it's like 9 o'clock, I'm just head down, punching data entry as much as I can, get cranking out financial statements and tax returns, 8 p.m., go home, next day, and it's this routine of just going from the documents into the computer so we can get the tax return out. You're not giving your body and your mind any space to go back and say, this is crazy. This is a crazy industry where for 3 months out of the year, we're just punching data like lunatics. You need to have that space in your body and your mind to go back and say, you know what? Here's my innovation. I want the taxes. Oh, well, the accountants say, well, hold on, that's 40% of my revenue. How am I going to survive by not doing taxes? Really? That's a problem? Who wants that? Who actually likes to get their taxes done by a tax accountant? Tax accounting is default business. We get it because our government created a framework in which it's impossible for people to do it themselves. We are surviving off the tit of a highly regulated government. How much value are you adding in the first place, other than, oh, wow, we save people money on taxes. That's how we're innovative and creative. We save people money on taxes. But again, you're saving them on something that has no value. People value not giving the money to the government, but people with much value making 10 times what they're making and giving the government 40%, but they got 10 times what they're making because you helped them get there. So innovation sometimes is just a little flip in your head where you stop thinking about just trying to make the status quo slightly better, right? This is what 0 to 1 talks about. It is harder to go from 0 to 1 than to go from 1 to 100. And the best way to illustrate it is come out with an ebook and put it online and offer it for free and watch you get 10,000 downloads. Now, charge $1 for it. Watch that go from 10,000 downloads to 7. Now, go from $1 to $100. Watch those 7 go to 6. Because what ends up happening is once somebody's willing to pay a dollar for something, they're probably willing to pay 100. But making that jump from zero to one, it's the most difficult thing. And only monopoly, specialization, best-in-class mentality can create the mental platform for you to come up with those zero to one type of ideas and innovation.
I like the fact that you're using the word, you know, mentality, mindset. You have to believe it first and then act upon that belief. So many things, not just in business, but in life in general, are all mindset, right? You and I touched on this some on our previous episode on pricing. So much of good pricing is mindset and believing you can. And so it's no surprise that innovation is very much the same way. One of the things that I'd like to hear you talk more about is kind of categories of innovation. And I think there were a couple that you had mentioned, maybe disruptive and one other type. Kind of unpack what those are and explain those.
Yeah, I sprinkled it throughout my spiel there. So there's two types of innovation. There's sustaining innovation, and then there's disruptive innovation. And this comes from the innovator's dilemma, which I think a lot of it inspired Peter Thiel to write Zero to One. So if people are deciding to what book should I read, it's got to be Peter Thiel's Zero to One, no matter what. But the sustaining innovation is when you improve based on feedback. It's when you make things slightly better. It's when you listen to podcasts about best business practices and you take the ones that you like and you adapt them to the ones that you have. That's called sustaining innovation. That's putting a bit of lipstick on the pig.
Incremental innovation.
Yeah, it's incremental. Like all we're doing is looking at what customers are already buying and saying, hey, that thing that they're buying, whether it's a service or a product, I can make it slightly cheaper or same price, slightly better. But disruptive innovation is the one where when you come up with an idea and you ask all your friends and family and everybody tells you, oh no, that's a bad idea, that's the best idea. Because the one that everybody feels uncomfortable with is the disruptive one. And I heard somebody say this in a podcast once, and I think it was brilliant. You know, there are parents that prefer to send their kids on Uber than to buy them a car. Think about saying no to your 16-year-old daughter, saying, I'm not going to give you a car, but I'm going to give you money so you can get some dude's car so he can drive you around the city. Think about, as a parent, when you frame it that way, how that makes any sense. But Uber reinvented transportation, reinvented how we feel about safety. Think about it. It's safer to send your kid in some stranger's car than to give him a car on their own. That's true disruption. So when someone proposed to an investor and say, hey, by the way, I'm going to create an industry in which parents prefer to send their kids in strangers' cars instead of buying them their own, everybody would say, that's the dumbest idea I ever heard. But you know what? It was the best idea that people could come up with. So those are the type of things. I mean, those are the type of things.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Uber. I just this week was renewing my car policy and I switched companies. And the new company had a question that I'd not seen before. You know, I was basically primarily we use our cars, you know, just for commuting and local, you know, getting the kids to and from school and activities and such. So it's mostly personal use. But there was a question, is this car going to be used essentially for Uber or Lyft? And I was like, okay, you have impacted an industry when insurance companies start asking people, are you doing this thing? That's innovation. That's impact.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me that on an insurance questionnaire like that, where you sign an affidavit that says, I will not text while I drive. I will not check my email while I drive. I mean, that's what the type of things that happens. Innovation transforms the face of what you thought was the normal. And as an, so to I would like to narrow it down to what this looks like in the accounting world. And I know you had a question for me, the last question for me about, because I was alluding to the problems that we create in order to innovate as service professionals.
Right. Well, I think as we were doing our show prep, you'd said you actually created a problem.
Right.
So what was that?
Yeah. So let's go back for a second and think about the problem that QuickBooks created. QuickBooks created the problem in which people do their own accounting. That was not a problem before, right? Before QuickBooks was created, people said an accountant does accounting. But then QuickBooks came out and they said for $100 or $200, whatever the software was back then, you can install it on your computer. You can open up this thing that looks like a checkbook and it looks very familiar to you, and you can punch things in there, and something that looks like accounting to you will come out, where all the accountants would argue against it. By the way, it's a whole different conversation, how the whole accounting industry felt. Just so you know, Kirk, I don't know if you've been in the QuickBooks world long enough. Accountants hated QuickBooks. Accountants try to create lobby groups against QuickBooks. You know, QuickBooks was disruptive, the whole accounting industry. It created a new problem. The problem where people now expect accounting to be done in-house, in real time, and accurate. And accountants had to rush to adapt to this new problem. They had to say, well, I no longer wait by my fax machine for somebody to fax me the bank statements or drop them off or whatever so I can punch him in my own system. Now I have to learn my client system. I have to go on site. I may have to train myself, train my team, and train my client. I now have to, God forbid, collaborate with my client. And QuickBooks literally created the concept that small business owners and accountants collaborate in the creation process of their financial statements. The accountants created a monopoly, yes, and kudos to the accounting industry for creating the monopoly around who does financial statements. But then QuickBooks came along and they created the monopoly around what program do you use to create your own when you don't have the accountant, can't afford the accountant, or can't trust the accountant to do it. So in that same spirit, I created a similar problem. I said, you know what? I'm going to create a YouTube channel that pulls the curtain around the magic that the accountants do.
Pulls the curtain back, in other words, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pull the curtain back and say, I'm going to tell you what I do as an accountant when I work with my clients. And then the general sentiment that was like, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You're showing people how to do what is your livelihood to do. And that to me was my moment of random brilliance where I created my own disruption. The disruption was I no longer get clients that say, here's my stuff, do it for me. I only get customers that say, work with me on this. And that essentially has been my niche and my specialty. My specialty is to work alongside my client with accounting, right? Which requires training them, requires understanding them. It also requires to understand the drama and intricates behind moving paperwork around in an office and delegating work about who pays what and when and who does payroll and who collects timesheets and who scans the bills. The new problem that QuickBooks created was now people do their own accounting. Now the other new problem I said is now I'm gonna show you how to do it right so you don't have to depend on an accountant. And I didn't shoot myself in the foot. I created a new marketplace. The marketplace where people hire an accountant not to do the work, to work with them while they do it. So I created a new problem and a new solution consequent by having a YouTube channel about showing people how to do their own books.
So at the top of the show, I mentioned that innovation is one of three pillars of success for a practice that is thriving, either an accounting and or bookkeeping practice. So let's come back and tie this all together. Let's kind of put a bow on this, considering it is right before Christmas here in the States and I guess worldwide. So how does positioning, pricing, and innovation, how do those three things work together?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the bottom, at the end of the day, when you own a business, you want to have three things. You want your business to give you financial freedom, right? Let's call that profitability. You can only achieve profitability through correct pricing. It is not cost control or cost reduction what gives you the best possible profitability, right? People think, I'm going to cut costs so I can be more profitable. Well, if cutting costs doesn't get you the same great quality clients, I could cut costs and not buy good lights, good camera, good microphone, but I choose to spend to increase the quality of my clients, the client quality of my leads, so I can price correctly. So at the end of the day, as a business, what you strive for is profitability, which the fastest way to get there is through right pricing. Now, how do you price yourself in a way that people don't compare you with others or try to compare you against a measure of time, right? So how do you do that? You only do it one way, by having a monopoly. And we all have monopolies because no one else can be you. But if you highlight who you are, what you do, why you do it, in a clear message, that's where you create a position. And your position is, if you want this, you gotta put a ring on it, right? You have to pay the price. Because what I do is uniquely positioned to create the most amount of value for you. And I uniquely position myself to do that because I'm best in class, because I'm special, I'm a specialist, because I spent my entire time only doing this and doing this thing only. That's positioning. So the two things are highly tied together. Now, you do those two things right, price correctly, position yourself correctly, you're gonna have short-term success, immediate. Pricing is the only skill, the only idea, the only thing I ever implemented in which I saw the results immediately on my first sale. Because my first sale that was better priced than my old sale immediately gave me an increase in profits. So again, price better. And in order for you to have what I call pricing power, you have to have a unique position in the marketplace, a unique voice, a unique angle, a unique way of doing things. And the only way people know that of that uniqueness, that's through position. So that's the short term. In the long term, in order to have a sustainable business, you have to go through cycles in which you have to reinvent yourself, reinvent the industry, create new problems with the solutions, right? Or be vigilant about what people are asking for. And people were telling QuickBooks, you better go to the cloud or else. And QuickBooks saw they saw the writing on the wall. They say, if we don't go to the cloud, we're gonna see other companies eating our lunch. So Intuit went all in on the cloud, and it was the best move they could ever do. So innovation is how you take those extra profits from your better pricing through better positioning and reinvesting them in a business that's sustainable forever, a business you can sell, a business you can give to your children when you retire. So for that reason, I believe those three are the legs of success. Now, there could be a fourth leg that we could talk about, which is quality of work, right? Like, you have to be a good accountant, right? You have to know debits and credits. But those three things are the ones that we can actually teach. I think that, you know, experience and college and all that stuff teaches you how to be an accountant. But the stuff that we can teach, like Kirk and I can teach, because Kirk knows pricing, and there really isn't that many people in the world that know professional pricing the way Kirk does. And I know positioning, I've known how to position myself. So I can tell you firsthand how to do it, or how to think about doing it, how to build a platform in which you feel comfortable doing it. And then the nice bow, what do they call that? Icing on the cake of having those two things, a unique position and a price, is now having the money and the time to innovate, reinvent yourself, and reinvent the industry. So those are the three pillars to success, in my opinion.
Well, I like the way you summarized it. I might just paraphrase it by saying, I think when you position well and you price well, what you create is capacity to innovate. you don't feel the pressure to have all your capacity 100% invested in serving customers. You can invest some of that capacity back into the business. I want to close here by just reading something that it's amazing. We've been promoting this Alt Account It workshop for probably at least 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. We get the question, obviously, when you hear the word Alt Account It, you don't hear that very often. So the first question is, what is it? And it took us about 3 weeks of refining and honing. And I think we finally nailed it. And so I want to share this as we close. Alt Account It is really a movement which consists of only the top 5% of accountants and bookkeepers. Those 5% are going to be both differentiated and united around a business model that goes against the current. By doing things differently, you will build confidence in the three areas that we've discussed, the three pillars. You're going to be able to create clear positioning so that you can communicate who you serve and why they'll want to pay you more. You're going to have confidence in pricing so that you can transcend any type of hourly pricing and start pricing based on the value of results. And when those two things are in place, then you have set up a framework that allows you to innovate in the area of new products, services, and solutions that will set you apart in a way that nobody can think of you as a commodity. So if you're interested in the Alt Accountant, just go to altaccountant.com, altaccountant.com. It is open to both accountants and bookkeepers. We'd love to have you. Early registration for that ends on December 31st.
I'll say give yourself a Christmas gift and a tax deduction of transformation. Merry Christmas, Kirk.
Merry Christmas.